Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, the universal blueprint for building a healthy family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Once again, welcome to Parents Tool Talk, the radio show and podcast of Jody Powell and Parents Tool Shop Consulting. My name is Chris Gooley. I am Jody Powell's producer, and today's topic is holiday parenting issues. Now, today's show is a little different from previous shows because Jody isn't here. She ran off to Mexico with her husband. Didn't tell any of us she was going to do this, and wouldn't you know it, she's still there, and none of us knows when she'll be back, and there's something fishy about the whole thing. If he asked me, no, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding, everyone. Jody is in Mexico with her husband. She's on a well-deserved vacation, and she will be back in just a few days. But we still wanted to do a show for you this month, and that's why I'm here. What we will be doing today is playing a pre-recorded teleseminar Jody led with a number of parents on the topic of holiday parenting issues. Now, they covered a wide variety of subjects, including how to cure the holiday gimmies and teach children to be cheerful givers, shop with children without whining, begging, or tantrums, avoiding embarrassing gift-receiving faux pas like insulting Aunt Susie's gift. And there were also a lot of discussions about the Santa threat, the if you don't behave, Santa won't bring you toys kind of thing. And is it okay to encourage children to believe in Santa? Now, most of the show today is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any live calls, but feel free to hop into the chat room once it gets open. I'm having trouble opening the chat room, so I'll keep you posted on that. If you are a Blog Talk member, you can converse with each other in the chat room. If you are not a Blog Talk member, or if you're joining us from the teleseminar list, I don't believe you can enter text, but you can have the window open again once it gets up and running. And observe other listeners' comments. Somebody please text me if I am incorrect on that. Before we get started, I have one announcement. Last month on Parents Tool Talk, we played a series of sample content that ranged from excerpts of teleseminars like the one we're hearing today to original content like the files of Detective Merrily. Now, we set up an online survey and asked you to rate all of our different content samples, and we offered a $10 gift certificate towards any order made at the Parents Tool Shop website. Now, that gift certificate is still available. You can use it until December 31st. But the survey you fill out to get that gift certificate will only be online through December 15th. That's Monday of next week. Now, the way you can claim that $10 gift is we'd like to offer is to simply go to parentstooltalk.com. That's all one word, parentstooltalk. Or to blogtalkradio.com/parentstooltalk and listen to the show that we aired in November of this year entitled Harvest Time, A Cornucopia of Possibilities. As you listen to the show, go to the survey, and on the show, Jody will tell you exactly how to get there, and give us your ratings from 1 to 4 on each of those bits of content. And then at the end of the survey, you will be given a coupon code to use at parentstoolshop.com that will take an instant $10 off your order. But remember, you have to fill out the survey by Monday, December 15th, because afterwards it will disappear. But the coupon code you get is good until December 31st. One more thing I wanted to be sure is to let everyone know to have ready a copy of Jody's article that we linked many of you to in the pre-call resources in our radio show announcement. That's the article titled Taming the Holiday Gimmies. Jody will be referencing this article early on in the recording. If you don't have a copy of the article handy, you can access it at the web link I'm going to give you now, and that's www.snipurl.com, S-N-I-P-U-R-L, /JodyTipHoliday. That's all one word. So one more time, www.snipurl.com, /JodyTipHoliday, JodyTipHoliday. Now let's get started. This first segment is going to focus on giving, teaching kids how to be cheerful givers. I have to apologize for the quality at the start of this recording. Jody's voice is a bit distorted, but just stay with us. The distortion clears up after a minute or two. This first segment runs about 13 minutes, and here we go.
I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and today's topic is holiday parenting issues. We actually have quite a few holiday issues to discuss. None of them are particularly lengthy, I don't think, but we've really gotten a lot of interest. I've been getting a lot of questions the last probably 2 months as the holidays have been approaching. Parents have been asking some very challenging and thought-provoking questions. So I think some of our topics today will be kind of clear-cut answers, and then there's going to be others that I think are going to be, I just really want to get a lot of discussion and a lot of opinion. I actually have some opinions and ideas that people have submitted by email, so I'll share those with you. Before we get started, let me read what I had for the topics that I was planning on covering, and then let me hear from you if there's any additional ideas. So let me read my list, and then I want to give a chance for you guys to add anything in there, and we'll get that in the priority list, too. So the first thing is this is in your pre-call handout. It's an article that's on my website called Curing the Holiday Gimmies, and there's a couple of suggestions in there. We can talk about how to help children be more focused on giving than getting. So is that something that folks are interested in?
Yes.
Okay. How about shopping with kids without whining, begging, or tantrums?
Yes.
I was expecting to hear some interest in that one. What about, this is probably a quick one, but do we need to talk about when kids are receiving gifts, how they handle that, what they say, like not offending Aunt Susie when she gives a really ugly gift?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the Santa threat, which is the, if I didn't explain it a whole lot in there, the Santa threat is from about Thanksgiving to December 24th, if our kids are misbehaving, we can say, if you're not good, Santa's not going to bring you presents. And usually it'll work. Kids will behave. The question is, just because it works, should we use it? So do we want to do a little quick inventory and opinion survey on that?
Yes.
Okay. And the last one that I have is, if we tell children that there's a Santa, are we lying? And
yes.
If so, is it an okay lie? And that's a real opinion thing. So am I hearing we got some opinions on that?
No. Yes, I want to hear about it.
Okay. All right. Okay, good. So right now that's what I have. What other holiday issues have been coming up or would you like for us to cover during our time today?
The fact that the kids are 9 years old, they still believe in Santa Claus probably for the last year, and they don't understand why Santa can't bring them a big expensive present because we don't have to pay for it. Santa would take care of that.
Okay. So has anybody else come across that? Would we like to hear some ideas on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Just this year with my 9-year-old, yes. Same question.
Okay, good. Well, then let's kind of just go through in the order that we went, and I'll make sure that if we're getting a little bit lengthy, I want to make sure we definitely get through Lou's question. Anybody that brings a question, I always want to make sure we get through those on the call. And then we'll also, our conversation might stir up some other things that we might think of later. So we'll go back and give people a chance to do that. If you did, let's go to the article called Taming the Holiday Gimmies. And let's just kind of go through and we'll review a couple of the issues that addresses. And I want to open it up and give you guys a chance to offer any additional ideas or suggestions or opinions that you have, because I think you're all a wonderful wealth of ideas. And I don't have all the good ones, so you guys do too. So if you want to take a look at that, it really addresses about the first three issues that we had on our list. The first one being, how do we help children shift the focus from Christmas being and the holidays, because it's not just Christmas, it's Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, there's a lot of them that there's gift-giving involved, and that's why I use the word holiday, because we do celebrate different holidays. But the whole focus of the holiday season are society being so consumerism and materialistic, it's very easy for kids to just be thinking about what am I going to get rather than being more focused on and enjoying the giving. So let me ask you guys first what ideas and what things you have done to help instill that in your children. And if there's anything additional to that that I think of, I'll chime in 2 cents at the end. So what are some ways that you have really made an effort to help your children focus more on giving?
We had a tradition in our family, this is Shana from North Carolina,
thanks,
where for like the past few years, somebody dressed up as Santa Claus on Christmas Eve, and we would get a box, and we'd fill it with like canned goods and presents and stuff, just lots of stuff, candy canes, and we put in those from Santa Claus, and then we call like the local police station and ask if there's a family that might not get something like through Toys for Tots or anything, if they knew anybody, and then we would go and dress up like Santa and elves and stuff and bring it to them. So it kind of put the focus more on giving on that night, you know, on Christmas Eve when you're waiting and waiting for your presents and stuff.
Oh, neat. And that's also kind of a last-minute impromptu thing that who may have gotten missed by some of the other charities that they knew of them. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that some of you do? Don't all speak at once.
This is Lou.
Yeah, Lou.
One of the things I tried to do with, you know, my kids, you know, they watch TV and they see all the ads and they get kind of crazy and obsessed with, you know, the what am I going to get kind of thing. So This year I had them, you know, together we logged on to a site where you can kind of sponsor a child overseas for Christmas and make sure they get it. So I wanted them to actually go through it and, you know, they give you a list. You can see the children, you know, this one's from Bolivia or this one's from Rwanda. So I was hoping that that might help them focus a little bit more on the other folks than on just themselves.
Yeah, yeah. So sponsoring another family, your local United Way will usually know which agencies have family sponsor programs. I can tell you we're in the Dayton area. I'm pretty familiar with at least a few of the agencies that regularly do that. But the way you would find out that for your area is the United Way. If there's people who listen to this later that are in Canada or around the world, I'm not sure. I think that there are similar organizations. I just don't know what they're called. The United States, it would be United Way. So that's a great way of, and the more that they can physically be involved in the giving, I think it makes a difference. One of the most profound experiences I think my kids ever had, and this kind of relates to one of the other issues on the Taming the Holiday Giving thing about when they get too many toys and having a, for every toy you get, you give one up. And that can either be get rid of the broken ones or just make room, or if they're giving gifts, giving gently used toys, they can give those sometimes to daycare centers that are in some of the low-income areas that get, I think it's Title 20 money or like Head Starts in that. And I happened to be doing my parenting classes at a location that had one of those daycare programs in it, and I asked the lady there, do you accept donations? And she said yes. And what I didn't expect was I had my kids actually bring the toys there, and she stood there and told my kids about how little the children, like she'd point over to a kid and say, that child, you know, used to play with a piece of string because they didn't have any toys. I mean, I don't remember the exact stories of all of them, but it made such an impression on my kids to really realize how lucky they were to have such, you know, abundance of toys. Some of the stories were very tragic. There was like some kid that his parents were killed in a fire and he's the only one that lived. I mean, it was like really tragic, but to see the child playing with a doll or whatever, it really made an impression on me, and I know it made an impression on my kids. And from that point on, the whole process of giving up toys to make room for the new, that never was an issue after that day. I know a lot of kids, and we can talk about this more when we get to it, and we may go to this topic next if no one has anything else about the one we're talking about. But the whole process of encouraging kids to let go of their toys can be really tough. And I do have an article on that I'll mention to you. But before we go on to that, though, any other things that you do from a standpoint of helping kids be more focused on the giving than the getting?
This is Kathy. So
yeah, Kathy.
The boys is when we go through the stores, it's always, you know, I want this or I want that. And we talk about wanting and needing and the difference between it. And I also, I share with them that there are things that I want, but that doesn't necessarily mean that those are things that I get. And then we compare and contrast, like, this is what I want, and this is what I need, and I think this is what we're going to end up getting, and how about you? What do you want, and what do you need? You need underwear, so we're buying underwear today, but you want Spider-Man or something, but we're not going to get Spider-Man because it's something you want. It's not something you need.
Excellent distinction. And that's a life lesson that kids need to learn, the difference between that. So this is a wonderful time of year. We've got a lot of learning opportunities presented for us where we can reinforce that value. So excellent example. So, and similarly, as they're asking for things, that's also part of what helps them set up, you know, they're making their wish list, but one of the suggestions in the article is having them prioritize that wish list. And that want versus need, if there's only so much amount of money, budget, they can, especially if they're older, where it's not so much the Santa issue, like Lou mentioned, that we're going to get back to later, where they think Santa's paying for it. But if they know that there's a budget, then they also can take a look at, if you only pick three things, or if you only picked a certain amount of money, you know, what would be the priority for you? And so that's good decision-making skills that they're learning by doing that. So I think just the very process of taking kids and actively involving them in coming up with gift ideas, actually selecting them, like which of these two things do you think Aunt Susie would like, involving them in the wrapping, I mean, the whole process, having them be the one to hand it to them, hold the camera and take the picture when they open it, I think that those are all things that those of us who like to give more than we like to receive, it's those things that, those activities that are fun. Even before we actually give the gift, there's a lot in the process that's fun, that's part of the giving. And so I think just involving kids all the way down through that is a way that we can help instill that with kids. Any other ideas on helping kids learn more about giving? Okay. And one last comment there about what you buy the kids. Couple rules of thumb. This is right out of the article. Regardless of what you can afford to buy your kids, don't just buy them what you can afford to give them. Select gifts based on their individual needs. Those of you who took the class or have read the book, Chapter 4, where we talk about avoid the fair and equal game, and the example in there is, so let's say the number one gift on Lou's list is $20, and that would make him happier than anything else in the world. And on Shayna's list, the gift that would make her the happiest in the world is $15. So do I then go out and buy $5 worth of stuff at the dollar store so that I'm spending an equal amount of money on them just for the amount of money, or do I get what both of them want? And as long as it's kind of close, it's not grossly, you know, $100 versus $10. We want to avoid getting caught up in that whole, oh, everything has to be exactly equal and counting each pea on each plate kind of a mentality, and really focus more on individual needs and interests rather than strictly just on the money aspect there. Any questions, comments on that? Picking the number, well, and I like the suggestion that somebody else, another parent actually came up to it. They said, if the stack of, where is it in here, in the article? Here, as a rule of thumb, if the pile of gifts is taller than your child, they're probably getting too much. Mm-hmm. So I like that line. Now, I didn't come up with that one. Another parent said it, but I thought that sounds like a really good rule of thumb. So, all right, any other questions, comments on anything else around gift giving, what to buy, how much to buy? Anybody want to do more now with the how we get kids to trade out the old to bring in the new? I am going to be giving you a link to an article I have on my website about if your kids have too many toys, how to help reduce the number and some organizational suggestions for rotating those in and out, having them give them away. So you are going to get some post-call tips on that.
Okay, so that's the end of the first segment of Jody's teleseminar on holiday parenting issues. For those of you who just tuned in, this is Parents Tool Talk Radio, and you are listening to a recorded teleseminar that Jody held with a number of parents discussing holiday parenting issues. This second segment focuses on shopping with the kids And like the previous segment, it runs about 13 minutes. Here we go.
Let's go to shopping with kids, which we all would like to avoid if we could, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Yes. And this time of year, if we're shopping for them, then we make that extra effort to say, you can't come with me, and we find a sitter, or if we have a spouse, we have them stay with the child or whatever. So that makes it a little bit easier. So in general, when we're shopping with kids, it does, and this can not just be during the holiday season. So towards the, let's do some general, when you're shopping with kids, what are some of the common challenges that we have? And let's look at it both from prevention, because I think this is an area we can do a lot in the way of prevention. And then if prevention fails or if we fail to do it, when the challenge comes up, what those are, what we can do. We'll just throw out a couple of scenarios and some good practical tips. And then when it relates specifically to Christmas, if there's anything, or Christmas, Kwanzaa, all of the, Hanukkah, all the holidays, if there's something specific to that, we'll do that towards the end. So in general, what are some of the biggest challenges of shopping with kids? Let's just kind of brainstorm real quick. What are some of the challenges? Get a list.
The stuff they put at the register, like the candy and stuff, one at the end while you're trying to check out.
Okay. Check out line items. What else?
My boys always want the stick in a quarter and get a junk toy out of them.
Okay. The machines, the quarter
machines. Yeah, whatever
machines. They were. Okay. What else do you think are pretty common challenges parents have shopping with kids?
They get bored.
Boredom. Yes, that's a big one. What else?
They want to touch everything.
Okay, touch everything. What else?
Overhelping.
Okay. Give us an example of that.
Wanting to decide to get things that are not on the list.
Okay, as in grabbing things off the shelf?
Let's get some of this. How about some of this?
Okay. So it can be physically grabbing things off the shelf, but it can also be just suggesting what else to get or asking for things that aren't on the list. Can we get this? Can we get that? Okay. All right. Any other challenges? Okay, I think we've got a good list there. All right, in general, and we'll just kind of go prevention and then intervention and kind of cover some of these. In general, what are some of the things that you can do before you go shopping with kids that before you ever even walk into the store, you might be able to do to prevent some of these problems?
Make it clear that this is a looking day, not a buying day.
Okay. Today we're looking, not buying. Or today we are getting what's on this list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else?
This is Lou. I kind of take a different approach altogether and just do all my shopping online.
So shop online. That's one thing we can do to minimize. Do you do your grocery shopping online?
No, not that.
Do they go with you?
Shopping. For grocery shopping, yes. And it's always, they're always throwing extra stuff into the cart. And can I have this? And can I have that? And...
Okay. All right. So we can try to reduce the number of times we actually have to take them with us.
Thanks for sticking with me, everyone. It seems like we're just having some difficulty here with Blog Talk Radio. It might be similar, somehow connected to what's going on in the chat room. So hope you're staying with me. What I was just about to say is I'm going to play a little bit of original content that was played last month on last month's radio show, and it is called The Files of Detective Merrily, and it is an original bit of fiction, kind of like old-time radio, produced exclusively for Parents Tool Shop. So I'm going to go ahead and play this, and hopefully we can get some of these technical issues straightened out. So please stay with us.
My name is Merrily, Mac Merrily. I work in the city. I carry a badge. I'm a cop. It was Monday, November 10th. It was cloudy in the city. 8:45 a.m., the chief asked me to help out an investigation at City Hall. Every day, thousands of citizens reduce their carbon footprint by riding their bicycles to work. Well, today, some lowlife decided to increase his criminal footprint by bending the spokes on every bicycle parked around that building. 9.04 a.m., I arrived on the scene. The situation was pretty much under control. As I rounded the corner of 4th and Main, I found Earl, a fellow detective, checking the damage to the bicycles along the northeast wall. Hello, Earl.
Oh, hey, Merrily. Hey, have you ever seen anything like this?
You asking if I've ever seen so many square wheels around City Hall? Hey, Earl, what's with you? You usually double over at my political jokes.
What? Oh, sorry, Merrily. I've got my mind on the job.
I'll say. You've been taking notes on this one bicycle for the last 10 minutes.
I have? Oh, yeah.
Maybe you should tell me what's on your mind.
It's just something going on at home. It's weird.
I like weird. I like it just fine.
Well, you see, my wife and I were having breakfast. Cheerios, actually. I'm having mine without bananas, and she's having hers with bananas.
Earl, are these Cheerios crucial to the story?
Well, kinda. I mean, they're not crucial, but...
Then perhaps you could advance to the post-Cheerio portion of the story.
But it all started with the Cheerios. One minute Don and I are talking about how we eat cereal differently. Next minute, things get all serious, and we start talking about Cody.
Your son.
Yeah. You see, last night he rode his bike to the end of the street, and we usually tell him he can't go past the stop sign just down the road. He said he was older now and wanted to ride his bike further. I didn't see much problem with it, but Don said we should have disciplined him for breaking the rule.
Uh-huh.
And then it turned into this whole big argument about how we're not consistent in how we parent and that it's bad for Cody. That was her opinion, at least, and I didn't agree with it at first, but now I'm starting to wonder. Anyway, enough about that. Let's get back to work.
Listening to Earl talk about his predicament made me two things, confused and hungry. 10:15 a.m., after stopping by my apartment for a bowl of cereal, I decided to head back to the station to file my report. On the way, I made a stop to see Benny, the shoeshine guy.
Hey, Mac, how goes it?
Just fine, Benny. Can you give me a shine?
Yeah, sure. Hey, it looks like you got a Cheerio on your shoe.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll come off easy enough. Hey, you got something on your mind there, Merrily?
How can you tell?
Well, usually when I shine your shoes, you plant both feet square on the platform better than any client I ever had. But today, your right leg is bent at a sharp, acute angle, placing your left shoe in a much better position for a good shine.
You're saying I should straighten out?
Well, it would sure help me.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. Nice and even. Now, let's help you. Tell me what's on your mind.
Benny, you think that if a kid that's got two parents that don't do everything exactly the same, it's bad for the kid?
What, you mean like they don't eat their cereal the same way?
Forget about cereal, Benny.
I can't. I'm looking right at this ugly shoe of yours.
I'm talking about one parent's controlling, the other one's permissive, that kind of thing.
Well, I'd say it depends on how far they both are from the balanced zone.
Is that like the Twilight Zone?
No. Here's what I'm talking about. Each parenting partner can have a different, unique, personal style of parenting. In fact, it's good for children to learn how to get along with people who have different personalities. Teaches them acceptance and flexibility and many of the other qualities that have made me the 4-star shoeshine guy I am today.
Uh-huh.
But those differences have to be in a balanced zone. Think of it like a balancing scale. You put the weights closer to the center, the scale balances more easily. Put the weights further apart, and the scale swings back and forth like a seesaw.
I take it you were a big fan of Recess when you were a kid.
Hey, if you could major in it, I would have probably gone to college.
So how does my buddy Earl know that he and his wife have balanced parenting styles?
Well, one thing you could do is watch for the signs of imbalance. If one parent's inconsistencies sabotage the other parent, or the child can use those inconsistencies to manipulate, that's when differences become damaging.
Thanks, Benny. I better get back to the station and give Earl a call.
You think he'll understand the whole balance idea?
He better. He was an architect before he joined the force. 1:32 p.m., I propped my feet up on my detective's desk and placed a local call to a very relieved fellow detective. Turned out he and his wife had talked it over during lunch and begun working out a plan for becoming a consistent parenting team. When asked where I received this information about balanced parenting, I told him about a guy named Benny who got the Cheerio off my shoe.
And there we are, the files of Detective Merrily. And I just wanted to thank everyone for sticking with us. We have been having a couple of issues here. Hopefully, with re-uploading a couple of files, we fixed a couple of things. Unfortunately, for the purposes of time, we're going to have to readjust the order in which we're playing these segments. the segment that we just started to play about shopping with kids, I'm actually going to move to after the hour. So it will not be, you will not be able to listen to it live, but it will be on the downloaded version of the radio show. So if you wanted to listen to that, then please come back in about an hour to 3 hours after the show is over to parentstooltalk.com and download the show, and you can hear that segment. We're going to move on now to segment number 3, which is on the issue of gift-giving etiquette or gift-giving faux pas. And actually, also in this next segment, they will actually talk briefly about gift-giving etiquette, and then they'll head straight into some talk about little white Santa lies, at the end of which Jody tells a story of why she continued to believe in Santa until she was 16 years old, which I only heard as I was prepping this recording for broadcast last night, and it's fantastic. You really want to stick around for that. Okay, here we go.
I love it when we cover all these different topics. There's so many things in parenting. It's great to be able to cover so many in one day. All right, let's go to gift-giving faux pas. And I have to tell a story on this one because I don't remember how old I was, but my Aunt June and Uncle Jack came and gave me a gift, and it was, to this day, the ugliest hat and scarf set I've ever seen in my life. And I said something about it being ugly and starting to cry and that I didn't want to wear it. I think I was about 8, maybe 7 or 8. And my parents, the parenting instructors, were horribly mortified and escorted me out of the room to have a conversation, which is the first thing if kids do say that and you're caught off guard, to whatever you're going to say to them, say it outside of the room. And they had the talking to me about politeness. And so let me find out from you. At this point, I'm not going to tell you what my parents said. I'm actually going to turn it over to you because I want to hear what kinds of things you've said to your kids about when you get a gift, this is what we say. Because prevention-wise, if we teach children these manners up front, we hopefully can prevent those embarrassing moments. So what kinds of statements, what kinds of things have you taught your kids for when they get a gift, this is what we say and do?
This is Kathy. I had conversations with them in terms of need for thankfulness, and even if it isn't what you wanted, that someone cared enough to give you something, and it's important to remember it wasn't the gift that you got, it's the fact that they loved and cared for you and that you need to be grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard concept, though, for a 6-year-old who wanted Spider-Man and got underwear.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But it I think it helps them, but they will still make an odd comment here and there that make me cringe, and I'm just not sure how to take it further than that.
Okay. Anybody have suggestions for more than that? I actually rehearsed a little bit with my kids. Because I really did feel horrible when I realized what I had done. I really did feel bad. And I went back in and I apologized and, you know, but that was the last gift I ever got from Aunt June and Uncle Jack, and rightfully so. It was horrible what I did. What I've told my kids, it's similar to that and kind of taking it beyond that, is that they say thank you and they find one positive thing about the gift or the giver. Like, thank you, it was nice of you to remember me. Or, thank you, that looks like a really warm hat. It does, and they do not have to in any way lie. They do not have to say, oh, I like it, when they don't. But they do need to say something positive. Now, if a parent not too long ago asked me, so what do you do if they actually ask your kid, are you going to wear it? And most of the time, gift givers aren't quite that bold, but they might say something like, will you try it on so I can see it fits, or they might ask later on. And then that gets to be a little bit dicier, and it kind of leads into our topic of lying today, which we're going to get to a little bit later around the whole Santa issue. But of helping children be honest, but yet still be tactful and kind and to watch their manners. So we actually would rehearse when they were much younger. We would rehearse, and we would even pretend. We would have this really fun game where we would come up with the most horrible gift that anybody could possibly give. So there was kind of a funny thing. And we'd say, imagine, Shana, you just got, you know, I don't know, a ball full of boogers. Kids would come up with all kinds of weird stuff. Show us how you would smile and what you would say. And so we would, and it was only once or twice that we maybe did that, but we kind of did it in an exaggerated, fun game kind of a way. But it really got the point across. And they've always, I know when my kids open up a gift, I can tell immediately from what the gift is, whether or not my kids are going to like that. And then I've watched how they've responded. And they've really done very well. I'm pretty sure there have been several times that they were not happy about it. And, the other thing that I tell my kids is that in the moment, this is what you say and do. Then, after they leave or if we're alone, you can tell me privately that you don't like it. And you can even complain about it. You can go into detail about it, but it has to be with me privately. So just hold your negative comments. You can get a chance to say those. Just do them privately later. And a lot of times what I'll do is if I think that maybe they didn't like it, we'll be in the kitchen later or whatever, and I'll kind of whisper in and, did you like that gift? And do you think that that's something you'd want to wear? And that's okay if you don't, and maybe we can return it or whatever. So we kind of have our little discussion then. So anybody want to add or what you do with this, in that situation? Okay. All right. Before we get into some of the Santa issues, anything else that's come up in your mind? Just kind of some of these practical, situational kinds of things around the holidays. Okay. All right. Then let's go into some of our more controversial discussions. Couple of Santa issues. The first one I actually think that we're all probably going to agree with, but I really want to hear everybody's opinion and rationale for your opinion. The first one is the Santa threat. So the Santa threat goes from about the time of Thanksgiving until December 24th, we can usually say to kids who believe in Santa, when they're misbehaving, if you don't behave, Santa won't bring you gifts. And it is something that will work. Kids usually will start to behave. And so the big question is, should we use it? Because it does work so good, should we use it? So let me hear some of your opinions, because I have a feeling a lot of you kind of have gut reactions to that.
Probably really not a gift if they have to work for it.
Okay. Okay, so it's not really a gift if they have to work for it?
No.
Okay. What else do some of you think when you hear that approach?
It gives them external motivation to behave, and
okay.
It's not like for the value of behaving.
Okay. So it's more along the lines of a bribe? The way a bribe is, that they would be doing it for the bribe, for the present, rather than because that's the right thing to do or that's the good behavior that you've taught them.
Yeah.
Okay. What else does some of you think when you hear that? Now, first of all, let me take a quick survey. Who here has ever been tempted to say it?
I have said it.
I'll admit, I have. I've seriously considered it. And I don't believe I have. I don't think I have. But I know I've thought of it because it just seems so easy this time of year. It would be so easy to use that. But why don't we? Any other reasons? Well, the article that I just wrote this week, actually it was posted at the 937-513 Mom site, and then I also did a little bit longer one on my website, and I'll be giving you a link to it. It's called December Discipline for Naughty Children, and it deals with the whole Santa threat. Because aside from you know, some of the things that you've just now mentioned in terms of being external and all of that, it's one example of many that's kind of this universal, and for me it's a real pet peeve in parenting, of quick fixes that work. And when the question actually was posed to me by a reporter at the Fresno Bee, she saw my article in the NEPI, National Effective Parenting Initiative, newsletter, the Holiday Gimme one, and she called to ask me some other questions. And she's the one that really posed that. And my initial response was, you know, this is just one example. It's a universal parenting principle. Just because it works, it doesn't mean we should use it. And there's a lot of techniques, parenting tactics. Bribes fall in there. Spanking falls in there. There's a lot of things that if you do it, it's a quick fix. It works. And that's what's so bad about it. is that it does work. And so it's this tempting quick fix, but in the long run, there are underlying messages that we don't want to send. There's often negative long-term consequences that can come about. I've got several articles on the website about behavior modification programs, bribes, rewards, all of that. And a lot of that's based on Alfie Kohn, K-O-H-N, his research, in that across the board, adults and kids, that those external motivators really don't work in the long run. And I believe we've already talked about that in some of our previous teleseminars. I believe we had the cooperation one, I know. And didn't we have a special one on behavior mod about the bribes and rewards? And I'm going to say something. I don't know if some of you were on those or not. I think we did a special teleseminar on that. So anyway, so we've covered a lot of that. But it's one of those, it's a quick fix. And just because it works, it doesn't mean we should use it. So does everybody pretty much agree that while it works, that's not something you would use?
Yeah.
And does that kind of, do you have a real ew, yuck reaction to it?
Yeah,
I do too. So. Next Santa question, the second Santa question, which really just kind of gets into, and I'm just going to say right off the bat, there are a lot of issues in parenting that I really don't take an official stand on. I try to help parents look at all the different sides of it, and I feel like it's a very personal decision that each parent or each family needs to make. Working versus stay at home, breastfeeding versus bottle feeding. Yes, there are some research statistics that I think parents need to be aware of, but there are also other factors that go into a parent's decision beyond that. And because there are so many other issues, I don't take an official stand. I just help parents feel informed. Whether or not a family practices Santa is one of those. I think, would everybody agree that if we encourage kids to believe in Santa, well, do we all, see, then I have to back up and make sure that we all believe that Santa isn't real. Because actually I'm probably the one person on the call who believed in Santa the longest. Can I tell you I think it's a pretty quick story, but it's a really good story. Do you want to know why I believed in Santa until I was 16?
Yeah.
My birthday is December the 22nd. When I was born, I was put under the tree Christmas morning. Because I have a December birthday so close to Christmas, my parents always went out of their way to make sure that it was really separate and very special. And on my 8th birthday, Santa actually came to my birthday party at my house. And we all sat on his lap. And when he left out the front door, my mom told me to run to the back sliding glass door and I could wave to him as he flew off in his sleigh. And so me and 8 other girls ran to the back window. And simultaneously, at that exact moment, a plane flew overhead with a red blinking light. And so I thought that was Santa's sleigh and Rudolph, who was leading it. And it was far enough up in the dark that I couldn't tell it was a plane. And I truly believed that that was Santa's sleigh. And all 8 of us were absolute believers at that point. We had seen him in the flesh, and we had seen him take off in his sled. So whoever didn't believe, we ran to the front door, and Santa was nowhere to be found. There were no cars on the street, no nothing. And so I was convinced at that moment that Santa was real, and there was nothing you could do to convince me otherwise. And for the next, 8 years, it didn't matter what anybody said. I would say, but I saw him. I saw him take off. I saw his sleigh. I saw Rudolph. There were no footprints. There were no cars. All the logic was there. So I was a believer for a long time, and I really wanted to believe, too, I think. So for me, it was people, even my parents, were like, it wasn't, all the other kids would try to convince me that Santa wasn't real, and I'd always have that comeback, until finally I had to ask my parents, okay, so how do you explain the red light? And that's when my mom told me that it was just a coincidental plane flying over at that exact moment. So only at that time did I believe that there wasn't a Santa. But I really, we have done Santa with our kids. And that's not an expert, opinion or stance. That's just a Jody, a mom thing, that we have done Santa with our kids. But not everybody does. So I guess my first question, so I'm going to assume that at this point we all know that Santa is not a real person, right? Even I finally know that. So if we do encourage kids to believe in Santa as a real person who is coming down the chimney who is eating the cookies and the milk. Okay, not, I mean, we really are making them believe that he's real. Are we or are we not lying?
We are.
We are lying. And we're lying to ourselves if we're not. We are lying. Now, the next question then is, so if we are there any lies that are okay lies? And my article on lying, that's based on Ekman's research into lying, there are several issues that across the board most parents believe are okay to lie about. One is to say, yes, I like the gift, thank you, is an okay lie to spare someone's feelings. To lie so that we can throw a surprise party and tell somebody, you know, some made-up story to get them to leave or to get them to come back so we can surprise them later. Most parents agree that's an okay lie. And most parents will agree that for a fun purpose such as a Santa, that those are okay lies as long as parents don't go so far out of their way lying that it becomes a huge trust issue later. Like if a child flat out says, is Santa Claus real? And a parent says yes, then their devastation at realizing the truth later will be worse than if parents play along with it, as long as children are already thinking that if a kid ever asks a question, the parents always give an honest answer. Then that doesn't tend to be such a devastating experience for them. So we all agree that it is lying of an opinion. I guess I'd like to hear where, and I've got three different opinions from the women, the moms on the Dayton Moms discussion group. I've got some that do Santa, some that don't do Santa, and some that let the kids decide if they want to do Santa. So I've got opinions all across the board. Does anybody want to lodge their opinion on doing Santa? You've done?
We tell the boys that it's a nice story, and it's a nice, wonderful story, but it's a story. And they wanted to go see Santa, and I took them to see Santa, and they were just as excited to see him, knowing it was just a story, as being a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's okay that they want to see that story, but they realize it's only a story.
Okay.
And they have no problems with being excited about it.
And so if we don't, so it is possible for children to still enjoy the idea of Santa, and still know that it's just a story.
Yes.
Okay. What about some of the rest of you? What are some of your kind of, we'll throw out, and we're just going to respect everybody's difference of opinions with how we've, because I actually have gone to great lengths to make Santa seem real. I will admit that. We have a fireplace. I put footprints in the ashes. we've had great fun with it. But I never, if my kids ever did flat out ask me, is he real, I did promise myself I would never out and out lie to that extent, but that we would play along with it very fun. Because I really do believe in the whole spirit of Santa Claus, and I think it's fun to be Santa Claus, and as my kids get older and they stop believing in Santa Claus, then they help become one of Santa's helpers, and they help become that Santa person who can give those surprise gifts. And so that's how they transition over into that. But I will admit that we did, more than some parents probably do, we did Santa seems real.
How do you respond if you're actually asked that?
If they actually ask me, is he real?
Yes.
Then I would respond the way that Jim did, of that, well, actually, going back to the original St. Nicholas story, that there really was a St. Nicholas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, answering it from the historical accurate standpoint, there was a St. Nicholas, and this is what he did. And so now we carry on the tradition, but it's really more the spirit of giving, and it's no longer a real person the way that it was back when St. Nicholas was alive. So it was a more factual answer.
Okay.
Is what we did. Now, what about the rest of you? What are some other responses that we can give when kids say, is Santa real? If they've been believing in Santa and they're starting to question, how do we respond in ways that we feel are honest? What are some other ways you've all explained it? Or who are anticipating you might? Some of you have younger kids that still believe.
Would that be one where you could ask their opinion, like back to them, like what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, you could. Yeah. Do you think Santa's real? Because really, the older kids get, it's their logic. That really, it's logic that kills Santa. It's, now wait a minute, how can there be more than one, and how can there be one simultaneously in every store? And yes, you can make up answers to that. We got real good at, you know, coming up with logical explanations. If you want your kids to keep believing, you can come up with a logical explanation. You can put that back to them. So let me read the because a couple of the responses of people's opinions from the Dayton Daily Moms group had three very different approaches, and this may give you some language or some perspectives to consider to decide where you might stand or what you might do. One family who says they do Santa says, I've taught my kids to be truthful and that lies only get you in trouble. I don't see Santa as being a lie, but as a make-believe person. It brings out the creative side of my kids as they try to come up with where Santa would live and what he does during the day and what he does in the other seasons. Santa is just a fun addition to Christmas. My kids were not brought up to think that Christmas is all about Santa and getting gifts, but are taught the true meaning of Christmas. So if they choose to believe in Santa, that's fine, but it's not something that we push our kids into doing. And then the people who say it's something that they struggled with, it had to do with their childhood realization. And then the people who don't, there were two people who didn't do Santa at all, and it was for religious reasons, and it was it's just another story. It's make-believe. It's just another story that we tell kids. So, actually, I just took a look at the clock. We've only got about 3 minutes left till the top of the hour, and I want to make sure we get to Lou's question, which is our last question, and it is about Santa. So any final comments, questions about opinions on Santa, or have we given some good food for thought on it for you to munch on? We're all good. Anything? Anybody want to add anything before we move on?
Okay. Actually surprised me a little bit. I thought I had cut that segment off at a different part. So that is the segment of Holiday Parenting Issues hosted by Jody with a group of participating parents. There they were talking about first gift-giving faux pas and how to avoid them, and then they started talking about the Santa lies. Is it okay to lie to kids about Santa? Should you be using the Santa threat with your kids? And so that is what we just listened to. Just for everybody's information, for those of you who have just tuned in, this is Parents Tool Talk. My name is Chris Gooley. I am Jody Powell's producer, sitting in for Jody today as she is off in Mexico for a well-deserved vacation. We began to play a couple of segments of this Holiday Parenting Issues teleseminar, ran into some technical difficulties, and skipped one segment. What I actually did while the previous segment was playing was to add another 30 minutes to the show. So that should give us plenty of time to play the second segment. So this, as long as I'm understanding this correctly, the show will continue to air. You don't have to go to the download to catch the last 30 minutes of it. It should continue to stream. So what I'm going to do now is go back to the second segment that we had difficulty playing earlier. And once again, this segment is Shopping with Kids. Again, this is about 13 minutes, and you'll hear the first few minutes over because we already played it once. Okay, thanks so much for sticking with us.
Let's go to Shopping with Kids, which we all would like to avoid if we could, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Yes. And this time of year, if we're shopping for them, then we make that extra effort to say, you can't come with me, and we find a sitter, or if we have a spouse, we have them stay with the child or whatever. So that makes it a little bit easier. So in general, when we're shopping with kids, it does, and this can not just be during the holiday season. So towards the, let's do some general, when you're shopping with kids, what are some of the common challenges that we have? And let's look at it both from prevention, because I think this is an area we can do a lot in the way of prevention. And then if prevention fails or if we fail to do it, when the challenge comes up, what those are, what we can do. We'll just throw out a couple of scenarios and some good practical tips. And then when it relates specifically to Christmas, if there's anything, or Christmas, Kwanzaa, all of the, Hanukkah, all the holidays, if there's something specific to that, we'll do that towards the end. So in general, what are some of the biggest challenges of shopping with kids? Let's just kind of brainstorm real quick. What are some of the challenges? Get a list.
the stuff they put at the register, like the candy and stuff, if you want at the end while you're trying to check out.
Okay. Check out line items. What else?
My boys always want the stick in a quarter and get a junk toy out of them.
Okay. The machine, the quarter
machine.
Yeah,
whatever they're with.
Okay. What else do you think are pretty common challenges parents have shopping with kids?
They get bored.
Boredom. Yes, that's a big one. What else?
They want to touch everything.
Okay, touch everything. What else?
Overhelping.
Okay. Give us an example of that.
Wanting to decide to get things that are not on the list.
Okay, as in grabbing things off the shelf?
Let's get some of this. How about some of this?
Okay. Okay. So it can be physically grabbing things off the shelf, but it can also be just suggesting what else to get or asking for things that aren't on the list. Can we get this? Can we get that? Okay. All right. Any other challenges? Okay, I think we've got a good list there. All right, in general, and we'll just kind of go prevention and then intervention and kind of cover some of these. In general, what are some of the things that you can do before you go shopping with kids that before you ever even walk into the store, you might be able to do to prevent some of these problems?
Make it clear that this is a looking day, not a buying day.
Okay, today we're looking, not buying, or today we are getting what's on this list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else?
This is Lou. I kind of take a different approach altogether and just do all my shopping online.
So shop online. That's one thing we can do to minimize. Do you do your grocery shopping online?
No, not that.
Do they go with you?
Shopping. For grocery shopping, yes, and it's always, they're always throwing extra stuff into the cart, and can I have this, and can I have that?
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so we can try to reduce the number of times we actually have to take them with us, but that isn't a permanent solution, and they do need to learn how to shop well, so we still want to have some of those opportunities. So shop online, reduce the number of times we take them until their behavior improves. Okay, what else?
Oh, I got one. Give them part of the list to go find, or involve them in going to find the things on the list.
Excellent idea. And depending on the age, there's a lot of ways that you can do that. If you are a coupon cutter, giving them a picture of something, and you know that you're in the aisle, you're right in the vicinity of it, and so you can give them the picture, and they can try to match. Even a kid who can't read can often, there it is, and point it out on the shelf, and so that can give them something to do. That's not only helps with the overhelping, but also with the boredom issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gets them involved in some way. If they're grabbing things and wanting to put them in the cart, especially if they're just randomly grabbing things, it's not even things that they want, that's a really good technique of giving them something specific to look for and get that item and put it in the cart. Okay, good. What else has worked?
The wish list.
Okay, the wish list.
Yeah.
Okay. And we can start shifting into once you're in the store, too. So because the wish list is also good when you're actually shopping and they say, can we get this or I'd like to have that, you can say, well, how about if you add that to your wish list?
Right.
Okay. If they are going back to either the checkout lines, the 25-cent machines, those are kind of in a similar category that those are things that don't necessarily cost a lot. They're impulse buys. And when kids ask for those, what are some things that you can say?
This is Kathy. I tend to always say no. what I've realized is we've done a lot of shopping because it's Christmas time, and I've said no to that like 1,000 times. And finally, when I was driving home this week, I thought, you know, you got to find a better answer than that because no all the time has got to be horrible for him.
Exactly. So, and you all know one of the tools in Parents Tool Shop is no-nos, which it doesn't mean that we're saying, we're still denying the request. We're just using positive words because as soon as we say no and give the explanation, at what point do they stop listening?
No.
As soon as they hear the no. And then they're like coming up with all their strategies or they're starting to throw their tantrum or whatever. So we're still denying the request. Do you want to review real quick the five ways to still deny a request in positive words. We'll see if we can remember all these off the top of our head. Anybody want to suggest any that they recall offhand?
A conditional yes?
The conditional yes is great. Give an example of a conditional yes.
You can, as long as whatever.
Okay. The example I usually use is asking for a cookie before dinner. So the yes, you can have a cookie. Finish the sentence. As soon as you have your dinner.
As soon as we eat dinner?
Yeah. So rather than no, you can't have a cookie because it would spoil your dinner. One would be, yes, you can have a cookie as soon as you have dinner. Another is to provide an acceptable alternative. We'll put this back in the shopping. Okay, let's use this in the shopping. So they've asked for something. So we could say, yes, you may be able to get that at Christmas time when it's on your Christmas list. Or, sure, you can get that 25-cent gumball if you have 25 cents left over from your allowance, if they are getting an allowance. Or if they've gotten something else and we let them keep the change so they've got a little bit of money to work with. Same thing with the checkout line items. If they're asking for candy, we can either say, well, sure, you can have candy. How about if you pick from the candy we have at home that's left over from Halloween? That would be a yes. An alternative, let's say you don't want them to have the candy or the 25-cent thing or the item that they want at all. What would be an acceptable alternative? They're looking at the gumball or the checkout line, and they ask for that candy. What would an acceptable alternative be that's not candy? If you were to say, no, you can't have candy because, what would come after that?
Not healthy.
Okay, because it's not healthy. So you could say, if you're hungry, you can have, and then you offer a healthy alternative. One of the things that parents will sometimes do is bring snacks with them into the store as a prevention, because especially grocery shopping, kids are seeing all the food, and by the time you get through there, they're hungry. It's just like the power of suggestion. So having some snacks along, and so you can offer, if you're hungry, here's something, if you do have it with you. Or you can say, we're going home, and we'll fix dinner when we get there. So that would be. Okay, so conditional yes, offer an acceptable alternative, acknowledge their feelings. I know it's really hard to see all that candy and not be able to get any. And then actually where I go from there is I then redirect them. How about if you help me conveyor belt so that we can get out of here and not have to keep staring at all that candy. Let's see. Conditional yes, acknowledge feelings, offer acceptable alternative. Give a reason or information. If you were to have candy, it would spoil your appetite. Or if you eat too much candy, it's not healthy for you. At some point, you're going to make that statement, and you may have already said that, and so then you can use one of the other ones. So I think the fifth one is save no's for emergencies. I mean, if they're running out in the street or they're about ready to touch a stove, you know, don't stand there going, what should I say instead of no? Yeah. Blurt it out and then follow up with one of the other tools instead. So does that give you some ideas for next time you hear yourself saying a no, how you can turn that around?
Yes.
Okay, good review on that one. Okay, let's see, anything else for as they're grabbing things, putting it in, asking for things not on the list, touching things, boredom? Any other ideas? Okay, I think we've come up with a lot of them. If you're looking for something for someone else, like you're shopping for someone else's gift, and they start, this is what I was always running into, and then they'd see things that they wanted, and I would just remind them, we're here shopping for Aunt Kathy. Do you think Aunt Kathy would like that Transformers figure? Mm-hmm. And that would kind of reinforce to them, no, they're, you know, well, what on the shelf do you see that Aunt Kathy might like? So just redirecting. There's a lot of redirecting we can do, and I find that parents will often, like, say no or somehow tell them what not to do, but they don't take it that one extra step further and either redirect them, get them involved, tell them what they can do, kind of take it that extra step that really redirects them in a positive direction, and they will get better results if they can do that. Tantrums, I have an article on. Do you want me to post that again? What was the other thing I just... Oh, the no-nos. I'll post the article, the link to the article for no-nos also, because that is online. Whining. Y'all know what to do about whining? Brainstorm good responses to whining. When kids are whining in the store, how do you respond? Is that lack of response that you want me to give you an answer to that? Yes, Jody. That's what I know.
Yes.
Okay. A couple of reasons. The main reason why children whine, especially at younger ages, is because they don't really have the words. It's like they want it and they're upset about it, and so it's like this emotional language. So the first thing we have to do is we have to tell children how we want them to ask. So we have to teach them the language we want them to use first. Then once we've done that, then when they whine, we can use whatever code word. You know, it's like use words, say please, say may I please have, use the words I told you to use to ask. However you remind them, you've already taught them to say it in a particular way. So step number one, teach the skills. Step number two, when they whine, your first response is acknowledge their feelings. I can tell that you want something, but I need for you to ask me in words I can understand. So we're following the passer formula, acknowledge feelings, set limits. And then redirect would be let them know as soon as they ask you in a voice you can understand, you'd be happy to answer their question. And then reveal the discipline that you don't listen to whining. So when you hear them ask appropriately, then you will listen to their request, and then you ignore it. And if you remember back from our misbehavior, PU versus PO, unintentional versus on purpose misbehavior, ignoring will not work unless you tell kids how they can get that attention, how they can get that first, then ignore. Because otherwise, they'll just keep doing it. That's why ignoring doesn't work unless you redirect first. So number one, teach how to ask. Number two, when they do it, acknowledge feelings, and then tell them how you want them to ask. Then tell them that you're going to ignore until they ask you in a voice that you can understand or in words that you can understand, and then follow through.
Okay, so that was the end of segment number two of Jody's teleseminar on holiday parenting issues. It actually brought up a couple of things I wanted to be sure to mention. For one thing, I didn't realize, actually, that a couple of the issues that they talked about, they referred more to the articles than talked about them during the teleseminar. So I want to give everybody the resources to get to articles, free articles. These are mostly free articles on Jody's website. You can go to parentstoolshop.com, that's www.parentstoolshop.com/, just go to parentstoolshop.com, and then on the home page, on the left side of the home page, you'll see a navigation bar, and under PT Freebies, click on the link to Articles, Bonuses, eBooks. That will take you to a series of articles that Jody is touching on here in this teleseminar, including stuff on temper tantrums and on misbehavior. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody had that. There are some additional resources that Jody sends out to the teleseminar groups after she is done with these presentations. And if you want to be sure to get a hold of those, the best way to do that is to sign up for the Parents Tool Shop teleseminar list. And you can do that by going to parentstoolshop.com/tele, enter your name and email address, and you will receive advance notice of every Parents Tool Talk radio show, including resources before and after the shows happen that will just emphasize whatever was talked about during that radio show. And that is what she's talking about when she refers to post-call resources, and I wanted to make sure everybody has a chance to get that. So if you want to get on that list, then go to parentstoolshop.com/tele. Something else I wanted to mention, Jody was using terms like PU or PO misbehavior. These acronyms are something that some of you may recognize if you've been to Jody's parenting classes or if you've read the book, The Parents Tool Shop. I recognize them because I've recorded several of those classes. They are part of Jody's universal blueprint for effective parenting that she teaches in her classes and in the book, The Parent's Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. If you'd like to learn more about what she's talking about here, then do go to parentstoolshop.com. Check out the website. Jody has lots of free resources, including the articles I mentioned earlier, including a few excerpts from the book. But if you really want to dig into the Universal Blueprint and learn the tools for effective parenting that Jody offers, the best thing to do is to order the book. Now, the book is available both in hard copy and as an ebook. And if you fill out the survey we mentioned earlier, you can take $10 off of the book, which will make it a fantastic deal. So I want to make sure that I get that out to everybody. Okay, we are now getting into the third half hour of our show. It's definitely a good thing we asked for that extra time here. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to first play a brief ad for another one of Jody's teleseminars, and it's on halting bedtime hassles. It might be something that parents would like to have for Christmas Eve night, I'm thinking, or very least throughout the rest of the year. So I'm going to go ahead and play that ad, and I will admit it is just as much to fill up some time. But this is a fantastic teleseminar. It's a great resource, and this ad will tell you a little bit about it. After that, we'll go straight into the fourth and final segment, which is pretty brief, and it deals with the question posed by Roy in the teleseminar about when kids ask a question that basically says, why can't Santa bring us the expensive presents if you can't, Mom and Dad? And so we will get to that right after the Bedtime Hassles ad, and here we go.
It's the end of a long, busy day of parenting. Activities, chauffeuring, appointments, meals, laundry. You're ready to settle down, relax, and recharge. Maybe even spend some quiet moments with your family.
Then you announce that it's bedtime.
I don't want to go to bed.
I don't want to go to bed.
You can't make me.
But I'm not tired.
I can't get sleep.
Mommy, I think there's a monster inside.
I'm still not tired.
Will you stay with me?
Please, can I sleep with you?
I need a drink. I need a drink.
I gotta go potty again.
I want to stay up later just like you. And go to bed when you do and brush my teeth when you do.
I don't want to go to bed.
Oh, wow. Doesn't that sound familiar? If bedtime battles are wearing you down and draining your patience, you're not alone. Getting children to bed happily and cooperatively is one of the most common challenges parents face. Of course, getting them to stay there is the next. Hi, I'm Jody Johnston-Powell, author of the award-winning book, The Parents' Tool Shop. I invite you to listen in on an hour-long discussion I had with other parents just like you. In it, I offer practical step-by-step tips for preventing or solving the top 10 bedtime hassles parents commonly face. I'm here to support you and assure you that these solutions usually work quickly, effectively, and permanently. So spend 1 hour with me, and soon your bedtime experience will transform from stressed to blessed.
Do you want me to read what you submitted, or do you want to ask it yourself?
No, if you don't mind, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. Lou's boy-girl twins are 9 years old and still believe, this may be the last year. Trouble is they want lots of stuff their friends have, and it's really expensive. So when we try to explain limits and budgets, they seem to think, well, why can't Santa give us the pricey stuff so you guys don't have to spend your money? I really don't have a comeback for that one. Just wondering what to do about the obsession with stuff. So anybody have a suggestion for how to respond to that question? And this would be, if someone is answering the Santa questions, how would you answer that?
Santa has to have an operating budget.
Okay. Okay, Santa has to have an operating budget too. Okay. Lou, I responded by email, but I'll tell you what we did when that question came up is that we said that for many, many years, Santa just gave gifts that the elves could make. But these days, kids want things like Nintendo and Xbox, and the elves can't make that. Even Santa would have to buy that at a store. So if it's something that the elves can't make, then parents get the bill.
There you go.
So it That wasn't a flat out, is there really Santa Claus question. So it was just another part of the make-believe story. So
yeah, that's probably
I totally respect it. Yeah.
That's
any other ideas?
I'm Santa.
Right, right.
More children now that have to be serviced. So things cost more than they've ever cost before, so parents have to help out.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Good. Any other ideas for that? Okay. And I'll just kind of end the whole Santa discussion saying that I respect anybody's opinion on that, and hopefully as I look back, there are things I probably would have done differently, or idealistically I should have done differently. And although I feel like I never did out and out lie to my kids. So for parents who don't do Santa at all, I totally respect that and think that that's great that they can. And those of us that do, as long as we don't totally out and out lie to our kids, I think we can have a lot of fun. Okay.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everybody, and happy holidays.
Thank you, Jody. Happy holidays.
Right. Talk to you next year.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for this edition of Parents Tool Talk Radio. We thank everybody for joining us, sticking with us through the technical issues. That is all the material we have to play for you until January. So we wish you all a safe, happy, healthy holiday season. Please sign up for the teleseminar list at parentstoolshop.com/tele so you can be more informed on upcoming radio shows. That is it. Don't forget that the radio survey coupon is still good. Go to sniffurl.com/radio survey and listen to the November Thanksgiving show and rate our content samples. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a happy, healthy holiday season.